Anagaishimas. Welcome to Cliff's Wujo. A Wujo is a place where the Wujo arts are practiced, as a dojo is a place in which the martial arts are practiced. The Wuwu arts are all things not allowed in mainstream media. Wuwu is all talk not fit for polite discussion. Wuwu is the other half of what makes us human. Today is March 14, 2012. Subject of today's Wujo is radiation and its effects on the human body. The reason for today's Wujo is the increased radiation entering our environment these past few years. This includes solar as well as terrestrial sources. By solar, I mean space in general. This likely includes unknown energies from space that are in the radiation range that we're just not quite prepared to detect. We're also receiving a lot more radiation in general from the planet. Just as it goes through this expansion process, it's going to increase its amount of radiation as well as a byproduct, really, of some of the production of the rare earth minerals and the more complex minerals. Radiation exposure is on the increase as a result of Fukushima. Everyone in the Northern Hemisphere, I think, is pretty much aware of that. Many discount this, but it's going to be a long-term source. We also have the potential for further nuclear plant intrusions in our environment with their radiation. This may be as a result of solar problems, bursts of energy that cause the nuke plants to have problems and thus emit more radiation. Further, there's these naturally occurring points of radiation that include volcanoes. As the more volcanic activity occurs, it's going to produce larger and deeper rifts, bringing up deeper material. The deeper material is much more likely to be radioactive. Some of the radioactivity is going to and is indeed entering our environment. It makes sense for us to stop and have a Wujo on radioactivity and its effects on the human body and to consider those effects and how we intend to deal with them now and into the future. In our discussion here today, we're not going to examine things from a perspective that a doctor may pursue or a scientist. We're going to examine it from humans trying to live in this environment. To provide a context in which we can make some informed, mostly reasonable, decisions. So we're going to think about radiation as aspects of duality. The radioactive particles themselves and the radiation damage that they cause. Bear in mind that the radiation itself, usually, as a rule, doesn't stick around inside your body unless you accumulate enough of it that the individual cells within your body become basically saturated and thus become radioactive, and or unless you pick up and ingest radioactive particles, both of which would be bad things. Now, radioactivity has both short-term and long-term effects. We associate it with cancer, we associate it with Godzilla. Both are bad things. Although arguably the Japanese seem to like Godzilla, they brought him back enough. In any event, radiation as its impacts on the human body are concerned, the short-term effects are going to show up in those parts of the body that are in rapid cycling. Of the cells. This would include, and this is the idea that every so often your body parts reconstitute themselves. So, for instance, you change out every skin molecule every 7 weeks or something along those lines. Your bones might take 7 to 8 years to totally change out all the molecules, although the bones themselves have in it some of the higher cycling material, which is the bone marrow, which goes to the production of red blood cells and deals with hemoglobin and so on. And that's an area of concern because the blood is one of the more rapidly cycling parts of the body, along with such things as cilia in the lungs, the little hairs that move the dust out and collect all the crud so you don't have a congested pit of debris after you've lived a while. In any event, so here you've got all these rapid cycling parts of the body. The blood, to a certain extent, the skin, some of the elements of the kidneys, some of the elements of the liver, and also those parts of the body that one really wouldn't think about being fast cycling, and that is the lining of the gut and the lining of the nerves. So in general, it's safe to say that the radiation effects in the short term, immediate kind of a sense, will first show up not in tumors in the bones or even necessarily tumors any part of the body. Rather, they'll show up in non-tumorous forms of aberrant behavior within your cells that we usually call cancers. And these will impact the short-term cycling parts of the body, and they have various names. You can go and look them up. So, for instance, within the blood, it will show up in this various forms of leukemia, most of which are non-tumorous and are systemic in that sense. So there's not a central location, and they have to be dealt with in a whole-body fashion. This is what it makes leukemia treatable, but at the same time, it makes it difficult for people to go through that treatment because it affects their whole body. And when you affect the whole physical body, you have a tendency to project that impact outward into such things as your energy bodies and your key centers if you're into the martial arts. So the short-term effects go to blood, they go to nerve linings. Medium-term effects would be brain, liver, kidneys, spleen, that kind of thing, although again, arguably the spleen dealing with the blood will show up some of the shorter-term effects, but the spleen itself as an organ would show up the medium-term. Longer-term effects, curiously, would be such things as aberration in the bones and these kind of areas. However, again, there are early sign indicators that are involving the bones, such as the loss of teeth, because of the teeth not actually being part of the bone but interconnected to it, an indication of excessive radiation exposure is rapid loss of tooth material. And it actually has to do with something we'll get into in a minute, which is the oxidation component of the radiation effects and the skin. Now, everybody says, oh, well, what about the skin? Well, the skin is a very interesting organ. It's the very largest organ you've got. It's the beauty organ, so to speak, because if you remove it, nobody's quite as beautiful as they think they are. And if you look down deep into it, the skin is a process, not really an organ per se. And the part that we perceive as the outer layer is really the end part of that process where it's sloughing off the material it doesn't want anymore. And the new stuff is being created down in the lower, deeper layers. That is the place where the shorter-term stuff would show up. So, indeed, some of the impacts of radiation exposure will show up in the skin. But as an organ itself, its ability to function is not impaired for a long time of radiation exposure because it's constantly in the process of sloughing off those parts that have, so to speak, served their purpose. Notice that the purpose of the skin is to protect the other layers of the body. So it is designed to absorb radiation, especially in the form of the radiation coming from our ambient environment in the light spectrum and ultraviolet, etc. So the real point of the skin is as an anti-radiation shield. Unfortunately, it is not prepared to deal with the radiation exposures that we're demanding of it. Now, it's the skin's response. We should probably stay there for a minute. The skin's response to radiation directly aimed at it, so to speak, where the radiation is impacting the skin's ability to produce new cells that will absorb ultraviolet and eventually fall off the body. When that production ability is impacted, you'll start seeing things that will be visible to you. So if you have any other signs of radiation exposure or suspect that you've had long-term, and by that, that's variable with your skin type and everything, so we'll leave that for another discussion. But if you've had sufficient radiation exposure, you may wish to start checking your skin. It is a wise thing to do, perhaps on a 30-day process. Every 30 days, just pick a day, you know, the 15th of the month, the end of the month, or whatever, and just do a casual but reasonably thorough inspection of the skin and note what you've got there with the idea that 30 days from now, you can check and see if there's been any change. That's what you're looking for, is change, something that draws your eye that says, hey, wait a second, you know, that mass should not be there. And you can get very rapid onset skin cancers. As an aside, and this is not medical advice, but there is a product out there called Curaderm that the is available from Australia. It's reasonably expensive for a small amount. It is, I think, like $120 off of Amazon. It is an ointment. It is good for up to a certain stage in melanomas and is very good for all non-melanoma skin cancers. It's actually quite remarkable. It's from an organic source. It comes from a plant that is related to eggplants, and it's from an extract of these inner cells. And the Australian farming community has been using it for years with their livestock because they have radiation issues and high tumor rates with the livestock. I personally have experience with the product and recommend it highly, both for humans and other beings on the planet. Be careful, though. It cannot be ingested internally. It's only for skin use. And if you use it on any kind of an animal where they may want to lick it, you've got to prevent licking it off. But it will do it'll do remarkable things. Okay, so back to our long-term exposure, the other half of the duality of radiation exposure in the human body. We'll get to how to deal with those short-term effects in a bit. But the long-term exposure, of course, is very difficult, as one might imagine, to catch in the process and to do something about. It's difficult to detect tumors in many parts of the body because we do not have cancer or tumor detecting senses. We have senses for all different kinds of other conditions and pain and invasion and parasites and this sort of thing. You know, you'll find out if a leech attaches itself to you. They in fact go to some great trouble to disable your sensors, as do mosquitoes. So we do have those sensors to detect, but we don't have them for cancers. Radiation exposure causing cancer over the long term in the denser parts of the body is a direct result of the same levels of exposure that will produce the immediate kinds of effects, but it is of a different kind of impact of the radiation itself. Let me restate that. Iodine, for instance, is a radioactive gas in certain conditions, and so it's going to affect you in certain ways, and that's why you may want to, if you were exposed to it, you may want to take the anti-thyroid cancer product, the potassium iodine. That works by not allowing your body to absorb the iodine to begin with. So in the long-term sense, if you've got to avoid those radioactive materials that are going to cause the kinds of damage to the bones. So, in other words, if you knew radioactive iodine was in the environment, you would take potassium iodine. If you knew that you were dealing with the heavier radioactive material that the bones might like to grab hold of in their processes of construction, some form of radioactive strontium or something along those lines, perhaps even cesium under certain conditions, then you would be doing things in a different way. You'd like to limit your exposure to those sources. So let's take cesium for an instance. Cesium is likely to enter your system through the food. It would come in through vegetables, perhaps, and certainly in milk, cheeses, etc. If you knew that was the case, you could avoid those, and thus your body wouldn't absorb them. Strontium and some of the other elements are a bit harder to detect, so you're going to have to go to a little bit greater lengths to avoid those coming on in. Obviously, if you're an old fart like myself, this is less of an issue. I'm not particularly concerned about a 40-year bone cancer process, but if you're 18, this is something to be considered. And if you're in your childbearing years and you have children, very definitely you want to watch this. And so you'll adjust your lifestyle process to consider how to go about reducing your overall radiation exposure. As we are dealing with a long-term, multi-decadal, this will take 20 years, maybe even longer, for us to even get a grip on how invasive it is in the various areas. We're going to have to be a little bit more proactive and just fold this into what it's to our life. It's an aspect of living now, that is, to deal with radiation in a sane and a realistic manner, and limit our exposure wherever we can, and then if we know we're exposed, to deal with that exposure. If there's a question of exposure, the other aspect of duality is always the unknown, then we have to consider what can we do if we think we might be exposed. So, coming back to our two ways to think about everything relative to the duality of it all, well, relative to radiation. There's two ways to think about exposure to radiation, internal and external. Oh, I'm going to get internal radiation through food. I'm going to get external radiation through ambient air, through coming in contact with radiated surfaces, etc. There's two levels of exposure. There's not only the two kinds of exposure in the, within the human body, the short and the long term, there's also the two levels of exposure, which are personal, and then there's also collective. So, for instance, an individual person might become so radioactive that they became a potential harm to the community, and others couldn't go near them. Very unlikely, and it wouldn't last very long, obviously, because the irradiated person at that level would quickly die. But even then, they become a problem to the community as a whole, because then the community as a whole has to dispose of the now radioactive corpse. Again, very unlikely, except in places like Fukushima, where it's actually occurring at the moment. But there's all this duality involved in radiation. Within the personal aspect of exposure to radiation, there's not only the body's impact, but there's also the mental impact. The mental impact is not only at the physical level of such things as the nerves causing mental imbalance, but and other levels of physical interaction with the radiation, such as extreme oxidation, dehydration, and so on, all of which causing mental imbalance, and indeed the secondary effects of such things as radioactive blood poisoning, again causing mental imbalance. But we also have the impact of the radiation on our energy bodies. Now, you may discount this a great deal, but it is quite true. Anybody who's ever done any serious martial art work has proven to themselves that the energy bodies exist. And they've dealt with that, and they use the energy, the ki or the chi or the prana, whatever you want to call it, within their martial arts work. So, without further discussion on that part of it, we have to examine the nature of radioactivity exposure on the body and that body's projection of the radioactive exposure upward into the energy body. This does occur. There's very little we can do about that component of it, other than to do increased energy work, key building exercises, all of those kinds of things. They're very good on all different levels in dealing with the radiation exposure, and they'll also help you focus your attention and build this into a life plan. But you must recognize that if you start suffering, if you're highly sensitive to it and you start suffering wavering ki or some of the other conditions, you may want to consider whether that's an early sign of some form of radiation exposure, and you need to seriously have a look at that. I don't want to get anybody overly anticipatory that that will be occurring in great quantity, but we will see an increase collectively, especially along the west coast of North America. But as the conditions worsen around the planet over this year, next year, and in through this decade, with nuclear plants causing problems and increased solar radiation, certainly is a continuing observation that needs to be made. If you run into a situation where your ki is being impacted, you may want to consider it might not be simply a short-term transitory feeling or a bad diet or something like that. It may be something that your ki is trying to let you know. Now, because this is the Wujo, and we're discussing things that doctors wouldn't discuss, scientists wouldn't discuss, because they're all tied into the paradigm, and they're paradigm defenders, and by nature, woo-woo is outside the paradigm, we need to discuss the way in which radiation will not only affect your ki in your life, but your community in general. Because you have to bear in mind that the duality is going to express itself not only within your body and your local environment, but within the larger community in rather odd fashion, or rather unexpected, not necessarily odd. The community will have to react knowingly or in denial. If they go into the denial response, as led by the psychopathic leaders at the top that just don't want to deal with it, and because they're being paid by the nuclear-supporting lobby, then you will find cognitive dissonance. In other words, as an awake and aware human, which you must be if you're listening this far into this, then you'll find that you may run into the blank stares, the eyes glazed over, even outright rejection. Most likely should only extend to ridicule, but at some point it may even become violent rejection as the cognitive dissonance expresses itself around you. And that cognitive dissonance will be the, oh, well, I haven't seen it on TV, therefore it's not true syndrome, showing up as you attempt to locate those materials and things you need to alter your life to cope with what is basically long-term radiation exposure. We have to understand that the radiation exposure that we all suffer here on Earth has increased, and this is a rest of our life kind of a thing. We will be dealing with this the rest of our lives, no matter how long it is. The main brunt of it may peak sometime, as I say, 20 years out, and then probably take 20 years to plateau, and then another 20 years to settle down. Unless humans become very, very, very smart and figure out how to de-radioactive radioactive materials. That is to say, de-energize them to take their ability to throw out the stray particles. And it's basically the stray particles that are causing the problems. Let's go back to our duality a bit, leaving cognitive dissonance behind and how the community as a whole will react. Let's start thinking about how we as individuals need to react, because that's really the point of this particular Wujo. We know the radioactivity is out there. We know it's going to impact us at our various organs based on how rapidly they cycle their cells. And thus, it kind of makes sense, the faster they cycle their cells, the more likely they are to pick up a stray bit of radioactive material and or damage. The damage is done by one of the little radioactive particles going zhing and sending out a bit of energy that slices right through everything and leaves a trail of destruction in its midst, and that everything might be one of your cells and some of its chromosomes. So basically what we have to do is we have to consider our protection methods in coping with this at two levels. And that would be, again, short-term, long-term. The long-term damage is the damage to the chromosome. If you're in the breeding years and you intend on producing new humans on the planet, that's something to seriously consider. Let's leave that aside at the moment, though, and consider the impacts on ourselves and not necessarily our progeny. The impact on ourselves is also short-term and long-term. The long-term damage will be seen in your chromosomes and their relationship to what are known as telomeres, T-E-L-E-M-E-R-E-S. These little critters are hanging around at the end of all of your active cell components, and they determine such things as how long the cell's going to live and how bright and beautiful it is at any given point in its lifespan. So they're very important things. And these telomeres can get damaged as part of the oxidation process as well as through direct exposure to radiation. Again, you'll find scientists that will get into the minutiae and want to debate all of this, but I'm speaking at a higher level, and I'm using the ambiguity of language to provide a context for individuals to deal with what they are going to face in their environment. So, let's consider the oxidation aspect of this. This is a very large component of radiation in the environment. The more concentrated the radiation, the more dry or harsh or positive ion charged will be the local environment near that radiation. So, if you're in the nuclear industry, you're already familiar with this, but if you've got a lot of exposure to oxidizing effects from radiation, you should drink a couple of cups of lemon balm tea a day. That's lemon balm, and it comes from the plant Melissa. It actually also has the side effect of producing a mild, good mood. Be advised, though, that if you're on some kinds of medications, you should just check to make sure there's not going to be an interaction there. These would be antipsychotic medications and some of the more harsh lithium component kinds of medications relative to mood enhancers. Beyond that, lemon balm is reasonably mild and doesn't have a whole lot of side effects. It can cause some other problems. Again, this is not medical advice. You'd be really wise if you're going to ingest anything to find out what its impact on you is going to be ahead of time. Otherwise, you're just a stupid idiot asking for trouble. Let's go on to other aspects of how to deal with the oxidation component. The nature of the radiation impact on your skin and all your organs from oxidation is basically a harsh one, as though you're working around a kiln all day. You have to be careful, though, in that you can't respond the same way. it's much more like being around a welder than it is a kiln, in the sense that a welder throws out electromagnetic radiation that can damage the skin. And again, in this case, we have to be careful because the radiation itself in our environment won't necessarily be going away while we're trying to prevent it or treat its effects on our bodies. And we have to be advised that there are some contraindicated conditions. In other words, in a high radiation, high oxidation environment, you don't necessarily want to have sunscreen on your skin. The reason that being the case is because the sunscreen chemicals themselves are not stable. And I would never use it personally, that's an aside. The radiation, the exposure, the oxidation component of that radiation exposure can cause changes in the chemical constituents of the sunscreens themselves and make them not good substances. So just be advised of this. As the solar radiation increases along with ambient ground radiation, this is going to be something to really consider. Now, the sun itself has changed the nature of the energies it's giving off, so it's also debatable as to whether or not the sunscreen manufacturers, which is really, I won't go that way, but it's debatable whether the products themselves are going to ever be able to keep up with the impacts of the sun on our environment, even if they did function as they were intended. And I kind of doubt that personally. We have not seen a statistical correlation between the introduction of sunscreens on moss and the reduction of cancers of the skin. And we have no direct correlation that we can prove between cancers of the skin and sun exposure. Unlike, for instance, cancers of the skin and tanning bed exposure, but I can also make the point and argue effectively that it's not the lights per se, but it's the electromagnetic pulses from the ballasts that are causing the problems within those environments and not the tanning process itself. Long diversion. Now back to the oxidation. So, you need to do those things that can support your skin in its ability to shed off these cells that suck up the ultraviolet and then fall off your body, because those are very necessary. The oxidation effect on your skin will be to cause your skin to become dry, to produce less of these effects of these skin cells to absorb the ultraviolet, and so it's almost a double dual penalty, so to speak. The radiation in your environment dries out your skin becomes less able to deal with the radiation it was supposed to deal with, which is the stuff coming from the sun, and therefore you're at risk from both sources. And you'll notice that this will occur as a result of the skin drying out primarily. Almost all of the oxidation effects on the human body as a result of radiation can be considered as a drying. So from an Ayurvedic or Chinese medicine approach, you're going to want to apply moist treatments to those. This would include internal and external treatments. When we look at the oxidation effects on the human body, perhaps the best way to approach it is to consider all of the organs as a whole and our reach at how to support them, obviously, is through our food and our intake of vital minerals and vitamins and so on. During a period of time when the environment itself is extra stressful, as in when we have increased radiation, and then we're going to have to take the stance, I think, that we need to provide extra support to deal with that. In other words, business is not as usual, and we need to take that into our way of thinking. Therefore, those steps that can be integrated into our diet really make a lot of sense now, and we need to do it early in the process. Especially with radiation, the longer you go with exposure to it, the more you place yourself at risk if you're not taking an active steps to reduce the impact on your body. As an aside, let's stop on the skin, for instance, and consider that we need to look at the daily treatment we put on it. If you're female or male and you're using makeup, that's something that's going to prevent those cells that have been damaged from sloughing off. If you're going to use makeup, you're going to have to be very diligent about exfoliating, because those cells will be extra damaged due to the harshness of the environment around you and your potential exposure to active radiation. So, getting back to the idea of dealing with all the organs as a whole and the idea of food as a anti-toxic substance for us, and this in the sense of an antioxidant, but also in the sense of vital support, as might be defined by Ayurveda or Ital in Jamaica or Chinese medicine. So there's, again, duality expressing itself. We're going to want to do such things as to increase our consumption of anti-cancer veggies. And these would include things like the broccoli family, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbages, etc. We're also going to want to increase our consumption of antioxidants, both in the form of the brightly colored vegetables, tomatoes, beets, etc., but also all the fruits, berries, and the citrus fruits as well. Now, in doing this, we need to be aware that some of these, that there will be times when it will be appropriate to increase or take extra amounts of, say, for instance, anti-cancer substances. This is because we think we've been exposed, or we are under the impression that a level of exposure in our general area is increasing and we're somewhat worried about it. And so even just to allay the mind, we want to do what we can. Well, because we're in a harsher environment, a dry environment due to the various levels of radiation from space and from our local Earth as well as everything else that's going on, it kind of makes sense to treat all of this from an Ayurvedic approach. Now, Ayurveda is an ancient Hindu form of mind-body medicine. In there, there's the whole idea of balance, and that's the idea that I want to express here. If we need to get a big dose of anti-cancer chemicals, for me, the way to do it would be to eat a lot of broccoli sprouts. The sprouts, when they're 3 days old, have essentially 90% of the anti-cancer material as the entire broccoli plant when it's fully grown. So you could eat 50 little tiny sprouts and get the equivalent of eating 50 huge heads of broccoli. That's true of a great number of sprouts. Within the third day, they've increased all different kinds of chemicals that are good for your body, including vitamins and minerals. I suggest this because the chemical supplement industry, however cool it may be and however good their intentions may be, they're producing their products to be absorbed in an environment that didn't exist 5 or 6 years ago. And that environment is harsher now, and the level of oxidation will be felt by all of us. And even radiation aside, we're dealing with pockets of intense levels of environmental degradation, such as the Gulf in the North America, lining the Gulf of Mexico. The chemical pollution from the BP oil spill and so on is wreaking havoc. So we've got to be aware of these things when we make our choices as we go along. Almost all of these are going to have that impact of producing a positive ion effect. Positive ions can be considered drying. What you're going to want to do is to absorb negative ions, get those negative ions around you as much as you can within reason. If you're going to use a negative ion generator, which does assist in exfoliation and does help the cilia of the lungs and make you feel better, bear in mind that these are machines. They operate at 60 hertz cycles. They will destroy your sleep if you stay around them too long. If you want to get one for long-term use, you may have to go to a European manufacturer and find something that produces it 25 hertz or less so that it's not impacting on the cycles of the of sleep and your alertness. They have a tendency to, like, drive you, so to speak. The higher the increase in the negative ions. Negative ions, in case you're not familiar, is that's the feeling you get when you're way up in the mountains or at the seashore, and you feel good, food tastes better, everything is nicer, colors are brighter, that kind of thing. It's due to the effect of the negative ion in the human body. Speaking of ions, let's look at another aspect of rapid cycle effect, and that's the human gut. The impacts of the radiation from Chernobyl and other radioactive accidents frequently shows up in gastrointestinal distress, which leads to everything from expected, you know, vomiting and diarrhea, all the way to bleed out through the intestines. And what goes on there is that most people wouldn't necessarily be aware of it, but your gut is actually a very rapid cycle part of your body, continually replacing its cells. It's also extremely complex. It has to do a lot of work for you, and there's the addition of foreign agents, if you will, in the form of bacteria that assist you or not. Some of these, as we've all discovered over time, some of these bacteria are quite nasty and they don't assist you in digestion at all, and you will discover that as they invade your body. We call this, you know, stomach flu and the various illnesses and so on. The issue with the gut relative to radiation is that the oxidation effects on the mucus system as a whole impact the whole of the digestion process from the stomach down through to the anus. In doing that effect, there's because this is a rapid cycle part of the body where the cells are created and destroyed, as you may imagine, having to both digest the food and also deal with the harsh environment of stomach acid and other toxins that are within your food itself, your whole body, and also, by the way, the lining of the gut is basically just part of your skin that's in the same kind of a situation as the external part of the skin. That is to say, once the cells are done with their business, they're designed to be exfoliated and excreted out, be done with. So, when you take care of and need to treat your gut relative to radiation, you've got to deal with it in sort of an interesting way. Unlike the situation of the skin, where you're going to want to not cover the skin up and you're going to want to assist it in exfoliating naturally, but not peel off so much that you expose the new sensitive layers to increase harsh radiation. Sort of a very, very delicate balance there, the Ayurvedic idea of balance again. In the issue of the gut, what you're going to want to do is the reverse. You're actually going to want to help cover up the gut. Now, I'm not saying you're going to want to eat sludge or clay or anything like that. There are indeed appropriate points to eat clay relative to being detoxified from known exposure through ingestion of radioactive particles. However, I'm talking in a general sense for long-term exposure. What you're going to want to do is to provide a layer of sacrifice cells for your intestines and all the way through. And these sacrifice cells are probably best obtained in the form of bioactive substances like yogurt or kefir. My personal approach is to take kefir, K-E-F-I-R, that I make from kefir grains myself, so I control the whole process and I can examine the milk products for radioactivity before making the kefir, etc. Because we have to bear in mind, if we're going to use food as a process interrupter in the radioactive oxidation and decay on the body, then we have to make sure that we're also not introducing other radioactive substances via the food itself. So we need to just pay attention to what we're doing a little bit more and fold that into our lives. Now, kefir is an interesting substance because it the real kefir, not the commercial stuff, although that probably does some good for your stomach in providing sacrificial cells. Real kefir that you culture from the things called grains, which are not grains at all, go look it up online. And probably one of the best sites you'll find is a place called DOMS, D-O-M-S. I think it's Dominix. In any event, kefir grains produce a substance that, it's a combinoric life form that came into existence probably around 1000 AD. Seems to be a combination of yeast and bacteria and perhaps a virus or two in there, none of which, when taken together this way, cause you any problems whatsoever. And in fact, they produce a substance that we can call kefirin or kefiran, which helps build a cartilage in your body. It also appears to really impact the health of the intestinal process and the nerves around the intestinal process. So therefore, it also seems to offer some potential for aiding potential nerve damage and oxidation in the brain. But further, it offers great support for the skin, and one of its known properties just in general is a production of a healthy skin environment that aids in basically the sloughing off of such things as acne and some level of scarring and a reduction of things like sebaceous cysts and inclusion cysts, all these sort of skin afflictions. So kefirin is pretty good stuff. The only way to get it is to culture it yourself. You can't buy it. It has to be made and consumed fresh. The reduction of its ability to age you decreases rapidly over the course of about 48 hours, with most of that reduction taking place in the last 24 hours. So kefir is really good for both the skin. It's also good for the intestines. It seems to provide some neural support as well. Looking at other ways to support your body, besides eating a lot of fresh vegetables that you're sure have been thoroughly washed and or grown in over in covered over environments, so they're not going to get radiation from the rain and so forth, you can eat all kinds of fruit and other antioxidants, herbs. A lot of herbs offer antioxidant support. There's some kinds of special tonics you can use as well. These may have to be considered as tonics, these particular plant products. Let's take one of them, for instance, ginseng. Ginseng is a tonic because it's a near drug. If you were, for instance, taking any of the SSRI drugs, any of the antidepressant drugs, you want to stay away from ginseng. The reason is it'll make you manic beyond belief and drive you crazy. But on its own, if you aren't taking those drugs, it's perfectly fine and doesn't make you manic and drive you crazy. Although in some individuals, again, Ayurvedic, you've got to know your body type and your limits and so on. In some individuals, ginseng does have the propensity to provide headaches and make you feel a little bit more energetic than you might like. So again, you've got to take it as an adult and look at it that way. But ginseng is a known neural tonic with an ancient history, and it is used by a number of people that I know of at a personal level in the that work in the radiation industries. And they feel a lot better for doing so. So in that level, it makes sense to consider taking a daily tonic of ginseng just as a rule in a harsh environment if you're old and you need the support, or if you have some level of infirmity for neural problems, nerve linings and this kind of thing. Again, though, ginseng is a tonic, so it will interact with a number of drugs, and you need to do a lot of research before taking it because the interactions can be quite severe. Also, you've got to know who your supplier is. You've got to be very aware of the kinds of ginseng that are out there, how the age of the ginseng plant participates in its tonic effect, who produces the best ones, and do your research. When you get down to that level, it becomes a medical recommendation or advice, and I'm not into that. I'm just saying the plant itself is a nice, healthful thing, and if I were of a research mind, I might go and look at it and decide if it was good for me or not. It is a good generalized antioxidant and neural support and a systemic support in radiation and other harsh environments. I want to wrap this up fairly quickly. It's gone on long enough, and I could continue to go for hours and delve into more and more detail. What we need to consider as rational humans in the environment that we're facing in 2012 and onward, especially as regards to radiation, is that we need to heighten our awareness of how these things will impact us individually. By heightening our awareness to the environment, to such things as the 800 millibar band of the jet stream, because that's determined what's blowing from Fukushima. If it's going to hit California and you're in a mood to buy lettuce from there, well, makes sense to know, that kind of thing. There are a few other items we should touch on pretty quickly, such as if you're in the reproductive time of life, bear in mind your chromosomes will take a big hit from radiation. There are lots of things you can do, though, to repair and prevent chromosomal damage. You're going to need to do investigations on a serious level on the various different kinds of approaches for the various different body types. Also, bear in mind that body type is a big deal in radiation exposure. It's not quite the same way as alcoholic consumption, but to a certain extent, larger body mass does provide levels of protection that smaller body mass people do not have. So there are some body types that can actually deal with it a little bit better than others. If you're prone to the effects of oxidation in general, you go to the seashore and your skin dries out real quick, then you're going to be much more prone to getting the effects from radiation. This is something that you just need to be aware of. What other elements can we investigate further? Well, we can look at each of these items that have been mentioned as specifics and do research on them for our particular body type, such as Ayurvedic body types, Vata, Pitta, Kapha. We can investigate Chinese medicine. We can investigate telomeres if you're really want to get into it. That's where most of the damage will be occurring, at the skin level and the cellular level. If you're in the reproductive phase of your life, certainly something to look into. We can look into kefir. That's really good for all kinds of ailments beyond simply the radiation exposure, but it is great for the skin in radiation exposure. We can look at antioxidants and investigate those. We can also start looking at production of our own food and near-medicine foods, nutraceutical sort of things in the form of anti-cancer broccoli sprouts and other sprouts. And we can start looking at things like Qigong and Aikido exercises to boost the Qi, which is at that energy level, which we didn't get into at all, and we're probably quite glad that we didn't. This was never intended to run this long. I'll wrap it up now with a brief bit of a trailer here. I'm going to put a QR matrix on the site. If this is information that's been of value to you and you want to donate a partial Bitcoin, please do so. Please not more than a fifth of a Bitcoin. It's not worth that much, and we've taken probably about a half an hour of your very valuable time here. Hope the information has been of value. I'll produce a number of these. I'm going to release these on BitTorrent, so if you see it out there, it's no worries. Just want to get the information out for all the people in the Northern Hemisphere. Radiation levels will be coming to the Southern Hemisphere as well from the latter half of this year forward, and they will need to know this. And we'll also need to start really looking community-wise and find out what works and get feedback loops going. In any event, like I say, if you want to throw a part of a Bitcoin our way, do so. We'll also have this as an MP3 on our site with a PayPal for $1 probably to purchase, and it'll be available free on BitTorrent. Thank you for attending Cliff's Wujo presentation on radiation and its effects on the human body. Some gnawing on universe here. If you have any specific questions, I know we just barely touched the subjects involved, and there probably will be a great many questions. If you find that you can't answer them through Googling and whatever, or there's ambiguities you'd like resolved or my thinking on, you're free to send me email at moon@halfpasthuman.com with questions or any comments relative to the material. Again, thank you very much. With respect.